It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
I love that funky God intro. I just do.
We're back to the funk.
I'm back to the funk.
Hey, so you feeling funky?
I got my funk on.
Well, good. I'm tired.
Time for a little Q&A, Wayne.
Now, every time we do this podcast, I'm tired. That's not good.
Well, he's just traveling like little, you know, hi-ho silver Tonto.
I've
right
been
up
home for 6 weeks. Don't give me that.
Six hours.
Well, yeah,
something
but
like that.
I was home 6 weeks before this little trip, but it was kind of nuts, man. Six different groupie things in 4 days, and it was...
Groupie things? You not saving the world, Wayne?
No, not that kind of groupie. No, I just meant just four different, or six different kinds of people in various arrangements of things. And yeah, it was fun.
Just talking your head off.
Saw some old friends, met some new ones, got a great letter we'll cover someday of a pastor wrote to a parishioner after they'd left to go on this journey. So we'll get tear that apart.
Ooh, that'll
someday.
Be curious.
That will
you
be
already
fun.
Piqued my curiosity there.
Mine too, but we're not doing it this show.
And then you drove through the great fires up north.
Man, we're burning up down here, I guess.
3 weeks, this thing's not going out.
Oh, man, we got 90,000 acres fried. Yeah, and it was, I guess I was coming up right downwind from the thing. It was from Bakersfield on past, almost into Santa Clarita.
It's really just over the couple hills over behind your house.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't see the flames, though, so we're good.
All right.
It still has to cross 126 to get to us, so I think we're okay for now.
Okay.
I think so.
So I got some questions for you, Wayne.
We're finally going to do the Q&A thing?
Yeah, we got the Q&A thing.
How are we going to do it? Going to alternate?
I don't know. We never know. We just kind of go, you know, we're people of the wind.
I like worlds.
You know?
Rules. Rules.
I don't like rules.
The tongue's not working. I got
I'm going to start with an easy one.
Are you really? Okay.
Yeah. Steve Lotz from Milford Center, Ohio.
Oh, you got names.
Yeah, I do. I got a couple. I may not use them, but this one's safe to use.
Okay.
He said, love the podcast. Never miss it. God's cleared up a lot of issues for me through your discussions. One question I have for Wayne is, what is his definition of the term angst? He uses the word a lot. I don't hear it much in casual conversation.
Oh, really?
He'd like to know what angst is all about.
Angst. It's just a perfect word.
A perfect word.
Yeah, because it means just that anxiety that rises from tension. I'm not looking it up. I'm just
anxiety
telling you
that rises from tension.
Yeah. That's not a Wikipedia.
Very nice, Webster.
But you're welcome. But yeah, it's just the angst. It's not really anxiety only. It's just, you know, I'm kind of tense about it. Kind of, you know, got this angst or ambition. There's just a whole lot of things that go into this inner tension that's just got me all kind of, you know, in a funk.
Something unresolved, huh?
Yeah, some unresolved. That'd be good.
So why do you use the term so much?
I thought everybody did. So this is news to me.
Bursted bubble number one. You know, not everyone uses the term angst.
Okay, that's not quite a sacred cow killing, but...
your turn.
It's ruined my evening.
Your turn.
So this is easy. Is landscaping Brad's day job? I'd love to hear a little more about his family, too, and that's from Teresa.
All right. Yeah, landscaping construction is my day job. It is
at least as of tomorrow.
At least, you know what? I kind of go like from week to week to week to week, and it depends on the size of the job. Most of the jobs we've been doing have been larger ones, and they've now come to a close. So if you're out there and you're anywhere within like the Newbury Park, Thousand Oaks, Moore Park
advertising
area.
Okay.
I'm looking for some new projects to.
Well, we'll bring you for $20 for that.
Okay. Thank you.
I told Sarah, it might be time for us to dip into our missions budget again.
No.
Have something else done on our hillside.
The reality is I felt like, you know, the nice thing is I haven't had to make a single outbound phone call to try to find work whenever I've needed it. The nice thing is it's felt like God really has provided. He's either provided through, you know, some means. I get some passive income from doing some executive producing on some films. Sadly, that's run out, and now we have to find some more active income. But, you know, it seems like God directs me to put certain irons in the fire, and thankfully, he has always kept us going. So that's a little bit about my day job.
Well, that leads to Marty's question, because he said, how did you get into movie production, and what's your dream job in the field? We'll get back to your family. I forgot about the family, but
You know, the whole movie production, I actually came out here about 20 years ago, largely on a passion because I did want to do something in the film entertainment industry.
That was your major in college?
That was my major in college. Yep. And I graduated at the time of the writer's strike in Hollywood, so Hollywood was totally shut down. My day job back then, besides being a student in college and you know, producing films and doing stuff on air and doing anchor
there
stuff,
you go.
Was I worked at the Malibu Racquet Club.
Tennis
I was
pro.
A little tennis pro. And so I knew...
Little?
I was a little tennis pro.
No one's going to think you're little.
I was a little tennis pro.
So you were reaching around helping those women learn how to swing that stuff.
Yeah. Do the forehand and the backhand.
Oh, boy.
They used to pay me a lot of money just to prance around in my tight little shorts. Is that what you're getting at, Wade?
That's a bad image. Prancing around in your tight little shorts.
No, I was the human backboard. I made everyone look like a great tennis player because I would put the ball right back in play just like they wanted to.
I thought somebody gave me real good focus about tennis. And they were saying, you know, no matter how good you are at tennis, you'll never be better than a wall.
Gee, that's a high achievement. There you go.
Isn't that a
sport I was the human wall.
Okay.
But I really saw and I still do, I see TV and movies as one of the most profound influencers of, I think, what shapes people's hearts and minds.
Mm.
And I don't really see Jesus being portrayed like I think he could be. And so a real passion to communicate that is inside me. I just look at that as a medium through which that can happen. And when I was pastoring, one of the nice things is I had sort of given up the whole movie television thing because at the time when the writer's strike happened, I couldn't even serve anyone coffee. You know, it's like I knew all these people, but I couldn't find an in into that. And the Lord opened the door for me to do, you know, help plant a church in Malibu, and we were doing all the stuff there. But the Lord said, Brad, do you still want to make films? And
he said that.
He said that out loud as I was coming out of the movie theater having watched Aaron Brockovich, which was, you know, a little challenging R film. He said, do you still want to make films? And it's like the floodgates kind of opened in me. And it's like everything inside me said, yes, Lord. I mean, that's why we came out here. I hadn't had this passion to be a pastor as more as a passion to be a communicator. And he said, well, you get to. And what's been interesting is, you know, I don't think you can find your way into that industry very well. I think that's pretty darn hard. That's like a salmon swimming up Niagara Falls.
Yeah, not easy.
Not easy.
I've been there.
But the Lord, I think, really has had purpose in just opening up some doors. And so, you know, I found myself talking to some folks in my church office about some film ideas, that I had tossed out when I was actually preaching a message. And so I said, hey, I thought that was a great idea. We should talk about that. And that led into my having a chance to consult on some scripts. And I put together some deals. And I said, hey, can I be an executive producer on this one? They said yes.
So is that your dream job, executive producer?
I don't think the title, I could give a rip about that.
Yeah, but what do you want to do?
I think my dream job is really having a chance to shape the scripts and screenplays in terms of unveiling and revealing who Jesus is.
Cool.
And if someone could pay me for that consistently, that'd be awesome.
Okay.
If they want.
Is that another advertisement?
No.
Okay, good.
That's just my
I'm
angst
not sure.
right now.
I'm not sure that's our audience, you know, anyway. So.
But I think I would love to focus my efforts not in the landscaping construction stuff. It would be more in the creative realm of being able to be a little more free to write. And I think visually, so I mean, movies is kind of a language in which I speak.
And those creative things, I mean, they're tough to really break into. I mean, we know lots of people, whether it's music and musicians that want to do things, writers that want to do things, movie people. I mean, it really does take a door God opens for that kind of stuff to happen.
And
but it does happen.
And I think, thankfully, I've felt like enough encouragement that this is something that God has purposed. You know, it's like I don't think it's really mixed with this drive and desire to be famous, because it's like if I can't sense that the Lord's in it, then I really am not interested. I don't have a whole lot of passion for it. I can't work that up very much anymore.
Ah.
But when I feel like it's the Lord opening those doors, those are the ones that to date I've walked through. And they've seemed to be fruitful so far.
So stay tuned for the continued saga of Brad in Hollywood.
Well, yeah. Well, no, the nice thing is the Ticketmaster has been released in theaters in April.
Another plug. That's three plugs. One, three plugs. Two, three. That's $30. That's $60.
Go out and see it. I don't have the landscape anymore. My profit's on the back end.
So there was a family question we skipped over too fast.
Yeah, I have a beautiful wife.
Hey, we know that already.
All right. And then I have three great kids, Jared, Jonathan, and Taylor.
They're great kids.
They're great kids. You know what? I am so excited about who they are.
Sheba likes them.
Each becoming. Yeah, she bites them in the rear. They run around the backyard and get bitten by Wayne's dog.
Yeah, and Sheba likes it. She's missed them. They haven't been here in a while. Bring them over.
We will.
Oh, good.
But that's a little bit about my family. I mean, I think I've told stories about them. Yep. I'm not sure what more they
want
to know.
And then there's Chipper. And then there's...
Chipper's our cat. Maggie's our dog, our golden retriever. We used to have two golden retrievers before Maggie.
And Moses.
Moses and Elijah.
Yeah.
I used to have a lot of fun saying, I was up on the hill with Moses and Elijah, and that was a true statement.
We should have a trivia
just a little misleading.
Contest sometime. And then, you know, people have listened to all
I got
podcasts.
A question for you, Wayne.
Okay.
Teresa... says, I'd like to hear how Wayne got into writing. How'd you get into writing? Are you into writing?
I don't know. I just have never thought of it that way.
Wayne, for just a moment, went blank.
Yeah, it's not ever something I thought I got into, but that's an interesting thought.
What was the first book you wrote?
It was about two kids wandering into the what do you call those
vineyard.
Things in Egypt. No,
Egypt.
those pyramid things.
Pyramids.
Exploring pyramids.
It was a fictional thing.
Yeah, I wrote it when I was like in sixth grade during the summer or something.
Ooh, was it good?
Those little books. I never finished it.
Did you like it?
No. But then my senior thesis was a book kind of in the Tolkien Lewis genre, kind of a fantasy about how the kingdom of God makes itself known in the earth. And
ooh.
I've never published it. I still got it. I saw it the other day sitting in my cupboard going, huh, I wonder if I should read this again, see if there's anything valuable.
See, it's getting
it did,
good.
It did count as my senior project, and it did, this is probably most encouraging than anything. I actually, during my senior year, had the chance to...
Are you talking about college?
College. Had the chance to, on behalf of the chaplain's office, to host Dr. Clyde Kilby, who was doing a series of teachings at Oral Roberts University, where I was attending. And Dr. Kilby was the leading authority in the United States at the time on C.S. Lewis. He was from Wheaton College. And the chaplain actually gave him a piece of my senior thesis and said, could you read this and give Wayne some comment about, you know, his giftedness, if he's got any, in writing? And unbeknownst to me, so we sat down one evening in the hotel lobby by this big fire, and he pulls out my manuscript. And he was so, and I look back, that now it's a piece of junk, really. I mean, that's his first attempts at writing, but... He was so encouraging. He just said, you have a gift. You ought to pursue this gift. It'll drive you nuts because you'll be turned down far more than you'll get acceptances because writing's a tough business. But he encouraged me a ton. And had a few exchanges with him since then. Before he passed away a number of years ago. But I was in Chicago, and I was sitting in his garden, and we were talking about it. And so my first published article was in, Logos Journal, boy, a long time ago, and then Leadership Magazine was just starting up, and I did a piece for them, became a contributing editor there. That opened other doors to do books and things, so kind of just grew from that. And it usually does. I think for people who do often make it in writing, if they're going into it as a field, is to do where you have opportunity. So if it's blogs or articles, you know, do that stuff before you write the great American novel that you push out there. But other people sometimes just sell the first novel, so it can work a number of ways. But that's how it worked for me.
Do you enjoy writing?
I love it. Yeah, my best days. I mean, I love being with people. I love like this weekend was all about. But my best days in the world are me and Sheba and Sierra sitting in here, and we're writing, and we're getting things. I love taking something, particularly that I've already written, and massaging it, just going over and over and tweaking it and finding something better. But you never finish. And you just never finish. You finally have to say, okay, I'm moving on. And every time, that's why I don't read my stuff or, you know, listen to a podcast. I think about, oh, I wish I'd said this there. I wish I'd done that there. Once I can't edit anymore, I'm done. I don't look back.
She also says, I'd like to know a little more about the God journey. Does this support you guys?
That's funny.
There's humor there.
That's funny. Who is that? Teresa again?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think we've paid expenses on this. And
yeah, we got a couple advertisers that cover just some of the basic costs. That's great.
And then every now and again, there's some people that have regularly sent us $25-$30 a month kind of a thing. It's come into the till, and that's helped. But no, it's a long way from providing for us. And I mean, God takes care of me through the whole other side of my life, a bridge builder's life stream and all that. I don't need to make any money from this. I think in the long term, we hoped it would become commercially viable in some way that we could, but it's not something we're pushing real hard. We just, you know, hey, it's there. If people want to help us, that'd be great. But
Well, initially, I had been approached about doing a radio show, and I didn't really have an interest in doing it by myself. So I said, hey, Wayne, would you be interested in doing a radio show? And you got really excited, and we kind of
I did one back in 1980, 81.
So we kind of concocted the idea of a little bit of what this show is about. And but one of the biggest challenges we had is it was sort of like we had to go be our own salesman. We had to go be our biggest promoters, and we're going to have to sign some broadcast contract. And I'm just going like, I have no heart, desire, or interest in doing that. It's like a total lead balloon for me.
Yeah, and imagine this. They were asking us to go to institutional churches to promote this program.
Got to go to the home team. And we're like, I'm not exactly sure this thing is going to fit that way.
I think you understand the concept. Yeah.
But I think one of the nicest things is we really had a passion and a desire to just put this out there. And we didn't want to charge for it. And I think one of the biggest enjoyments, at least for me, has been the sense of being able to just sort of put this out there clean and easy with a sense of, like, God, this really is for you and however you'd use it.
Yeah.
Because so much of the underbelly of what I've seen has been just sort of like the misuse and manipulation of doing things under the banner of ministry, which largely seem to be kind of either just for, you know, personal gain or personal kind of sufficiency. Like, this is my job. And it's like, I don't want to do that.
Yep.
And so I think the nice thing is we've been able to just put this out there. And sometimes it's provided for us, and other times it's just kind of been at least been self-sufficient. So that's been cool.
Yeah, and we really appreciate those of you that have taken the time or just had the inclination to send us a gift or something. Here's what we do with that. We use it for the expenses of website and putting this together and buying the microphones and things like that. And then when those things are covered, we just split it between Brad and I, what's left, and that goes part
provides
of
some freedom so I don't have to landscape.
Yeah, it's taken care of about half a day maybe at this point, but it's been good.
That's hey, I got another one. Someone said...
I have one.
Oh, okay, all right, your turn.
Yeah, is that my
your
pin?
Turn.
I've been looking at that Parker pin. That Parker, that's not my pin. I lost a blue Parker just like that. That's yours.
This was actually from a job site.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, then it is mine. It was my job site. You were here. So how many brothers and sisters do you have, and where do you fall in the lineup? That's from Marty.
I am the second born. I have an older brother who's out in rural New York, and he's kind of a disenfranchised brother, sadly. I love him dearly, but he's been sort of wayward for a number of years, and he's kind of like the reverse birth order, but he would sort of be a little bit like a prodigal. And I think he's found his way back into a relationship with the Lord, but there needs to be kind of some healing in the family.
Well, that's cool. Hope that happens for you then.
I hope so too.
Praying for that. And what sort of activities did you participate in during high school? Any theater or singing?
No, theater, singing.
It must have been tennis.
No, I was a full-on athlete and scholar. I did a...
You were a jock scholar?
A jock scholar. I wasn't one of those weirdo guys that just made fun a little, because I was the littlest guy out there.
Were you? A little scrawny guy?
I was 4'11 going into high school.
I was 5 foot going into college.
So we had two little guys here.
Yeah, the little puny guy. That's why we have so much attitude, probably.
I grew in college, but I was short. But I played soccer. I played tennis. Played basketball.
Wow.
I've always loved sports and did that a lot. I also worked full time going through college and going through high school, actually.
High school nickname.
Some guys did call me Little Archie because I have red hair, and other people would call me Opie, and I really didn't like that, but I was nice and clean cut, and so I was like, good old little Opie.
And where was that? That was in
Madison, Wisconsin.
You were in Wisconsin. You should be a Packer fan then. All God's people are Packers.
Wayne has a little plaque. He owns one share of the Packers. It's up there, and he's very proud.
Yeah, it's declining in value this year.
Already I found Wisconsin too cold. It was too cold. The state bird is the mosquito. I didn't like that either.
Now you're making fun of Wisconsin. This is not nice.
The cheeseheads.
You better back
off,
dude.
We know all the stuff about cheeseheads.
You know what? We got a lot of Wisconsin listeners, and we love you deeply.
God bless you. I'm from Madtown. I know all about the Badgers, and I did love to play hockey, so that was fun.
Hockey? Is that a sport?
It's a blood sport, yes.
Now we're going to hear from the Buffalo crowd. I like hearing from the Buffalo crowd.
Have to play hockey if you live in the Midwest. It is socially unacceptable to not play hockey. Does that answer it?
Yeah. Well, and I want to know if he surfs. This is Sue from Australia. I want to know if he surfs. That accent is gnarly, dude.
I
don't know what accent that is.
I actually windsurf. I was on the windsurfing team.
When's the last time
in
you
high school?
When's the last time you windsurfed? You were going to teach me, remember? We never did it.
When did I ever promise that?
We didn't promise it. We talked about it.
I haven't had any time to
we
go windsurfing for a while.
I told you not to have kids.
I do have a... Yeah, I told you not to have kids. When was that? I don't remember that.
See, you never pay attention to me. This is the problem. You're never listening. You're always talking.
But I have tried surfing. Nice thing is my construction buddy is a great surfer. And if we don't have work on Thursday, we are going surfing.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I'm a learner's board. I can't rip it like the best of them. But
I'm not getting invited to that. See.
We have he has a bumper sticker. Old guy's rule. So we do the longboard thing.
Ah. I've got a longboard friend. He's got a T-shirt he made for me. It says Geezer's Rule. I like it. Yeah. I wear it around and people think it's...
I can hang on the beach. I look like a surfer.
You do. Actually, he does.
I dress like
and
a
that's
surfer
kind
most of
sad.
Time. What about you? You a surfer, Wayne? No, here's...
I hate the beach, hate salt water, but love water skiing. So if I'm ever around and you got a boat,
Wayne,
you know...
Wayne's
got
to get out in the sun a little more often.
No, it's cancer causing.
I got a question for you.
I hate
with your work
sun.
In mediation and your desire to see problems resolved in a respectful way, wow. Do you find it hard to participate in the political system today?
Yeah, I'm going to use one of your words. I think the political system today sucks.
Wayne is in Sucksland.
I'm very cynical about it. I think our political parties right now have so polarized. And the only reason they're polarizing the country is not because they really have major disagreements. It's because power is found in polarizing. And I think at every level, from public schools where I work a lot, all the way up to the national level, and the 24-hour news channels feed right into this, the rhetoric of anger and mocking is what rules the day. I think it's sad for America. This could be close to the end. And doggone it, if we don't straighten out, we deserve it.
It just does seem to be diseased from top to bottom, full of self-interest.
And everybody's that way. You know, even our so-called Christian candidates are the worst at polarizing, mocking, angry. Won't sit down and talk to people just because they disagree with them. Won't meet with them. Won't try to find common ground. And I think that speaks poorly for this democracy. The bridge builders' work really has dried up in the last few years. One, I'm not promoting it a lot because I'm too busy. But the other bit is far more people. I did a couple of interviews in the last month to do some major bridge building thing. And in the end, the people that were going to hire me to come didn't want to build a bridge. They wanted to build a cage for a certain voice to be shut up so that they could have their way. And so in the end, they didn't hire me because I said, I'm not your guy. I think public school particularly is a shared treasure. And if we don't learn to share it past our deepest differences, then I don't think we have a hope. And California, I think, is one of the worst states now for promoting certain political agendas in the public school. It makes problematic to talk about as a common ground.
So here's a follow-up question to that. How do you as a believer work out or choose to participate in a system that doesn't really operate by kingdom principles or at best is always a mixed bag?
I don't participate in the system, actually. So I don't feel like I am. What I feel like I'm doing
is... Do you vote?
Oh, yeah, I do that.
Okay, so you partly participate.
Yeah, but I don't give a lot of time to that. I mean, I just vote. I just go down there and... vote. And the hardest thing now is there's just nothing to vote for. It's always the worst of two. Can we say idiots?
You just did. Yeah. You just did. I think you can.
Yeah. But when I help, I'm passionate about a world in which the liberty of conscience is respected. And I think that's what our founders tried to get to. I think Christians are lousy at that. We want everybody to have our conscience. We want our conscience to be, I'm right, you're wrong, so we ought to have control of the country. And I run into that attitude an awful lot. But I'm just nuts about if we're going to keep Jesus alive in the culture in a sense that it's accessible to people who do not know him, then we've got to stop forcing people to live our morality if they don't know the God we know. And that doesn't mean we can't pass laws restricting things that intrude on other people's rights. But I do find this idea of a Christian nation and trying to assert it to be fallacious. I don't think any human system is ever going to reflect the kingdom, nor should we try. But I think people can live that, and I think we can challenge our culture to that in the way we speak to it, but certainly not by compelling it. So I think I don't do it because I really chose to be involved in that. I did it because I was in a position to have some impact in some situation. I always call it my Esther moment. I always felt like, I mean, when I first got in, I kept saying no, no, no. And I just felt like the inner direction of my heart and spirit was, I'm opening a door for you, and I put you in a place for just such a time as this. Would you go and would you help? And I'll be glad when it's done. If it is done now, I love doing it when I'm in the middle of that, watching a
the
room.
The whole bridge builders thing.
Yeah, watching a room full of polarized people come to a unanimous agreement on a policy that not only causes them to embrace the process, but also builds relationships between people in the room, whether gay rights advocates and conservative Christians or whatever the divide is. It's fun to walk out in a room and see there's a relationship now that has the possibility of the life of Jesus communicating through that. So, I mean, I love when I do it, but I'm always conflicted when I'm in the political system.
Your turn.
Oh, really? What have you seen in nature that takes your breath away?
Oh, I love sunsets. That's one.
Hmm.
I kind of go like, God, you've never painted two of those alike. I think some of the best ones I've ever seen, I remember on the North Shore of Kauai, just being blown away, going like,
yeah,
there's no one here to. No, there's no one here to see this. It was just incredible.
Right.
I love mountains.
Hmm.
Mountains are, that's why I like
me too.
Going up to Telluride. That's like my happy spot.
Yeah, I'm a mountain guy. I'm not
I
a beach
love
guy.
Mountains. That's and I prefer them with snow
because
I like skiing.
What takes my breath away is fall in New England.
Ooh.
I love that. Everybody ought to do that once.
Go I think I'm so tired of raking leaves like from the Midwest in fall.
That's the best part about visiting
New England. The leaves don't really work for me. Thanks.
That's the best part about visiting New England, though. You don't have to rake on them.
Here you go.
Yeah, the people who live there may not like it.
There you go.
I do.
All right. Hey, this guy writes, this is actually Glenn. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
He wanted to know, I'll start with an easy one.
He probably already knows.
Why don't you like cats? See, I threw a curve at you.
Oh, wow, that's really good.
Why don't you like cats?
One, they give me asthma, so that's not fun.
You're hacking up a hairball, aren't you?
Yeah, I hate that part. And the other deal is with cats, it best expressed this way. Dogs have masters, cats have servants. And it's that attitude of a cat that just, you know, if you have a pet, it ought to love you. It ought to crawl. And I know we got all the list. My cat crawls in my lap and loves me like a dog. Well, if it loves you like a dog, put a dog suit on it, because that's fine.
Next time we're out of town, I'm going to let you babysit Chipper. This will be great.
Barbecue Chipper.
No, babysit Chipper.
Barbecue
Remember,
Chipper.
My children listen to this. If you say barbecue, you're in trouble. They'll never come over.
One of my favorite books is 101 Uses for a Dead Cat.
Wayne Jacobson's stock in the Cummings family is going down.
Keep those cards and letters.
All right, next question.
In.
Wayne, if I understand your personal history, you were essentially kicked out of the church organization you helped found on ideas of relationship.
Wow.
At the time that you were kicked out, or did you leave on your own accord, was the question, were you already starting to see that organization was not the way, or did it take God severing that part of your life to start seeing that it's not about the man-built religious organization?
Man, we need about an hour for this.
Oh, come on, short answer.
Oh, I'm serious because...
Did you start seeing that when you were in it, or...?
Well, I left it the first time in 80. I mean, I left... I was on.
What'd you leave?
I was on staff at a growing mega church in Fresno, and I was pretty disillusioned by the unfruitfulness of what that builds into people's lives. I mean, we were growing, and I was teaching huge classes of
successful
people.
Successful and all, like,
everything
outward.
External, but I didn't see people being transformed with the character of Jesus, and I saw a lot of how we had to manipulate people to get that system to work. So in 80, we planted a different deal. It was going to be different. It was going to be a community of house churches, and it was going to be relationally based, and we weren't going to do things with organization, and we'd decentralize leadership, and leadership was not over. It was alongside, and we had a lot of right priorities that spawned the Naked Church the first time, and that was what that whole deal was to be about. In the end, it chose to become more institutional over time and less relational, and that was what seeded the conflict. And in the end, I mean, whether I got kicked out or left, that's really a tough issue. I got resigned one day when I was out of town. That's true. People
that was being helped out.
People announced my resignation. Now, I had the power to come back in and overturn that. Very simple. Politically, I had it in the court of public opinion, most likely. But I would have had to do things to people that I wasn't willing to do. And I didn't, in the end, want to be left with all that, because in the end, this was less the church that I wanted to be a part of than it was in our earlier days. So, it was very clear in the end, God asked me not to challenge it, not to go back, and he asked me not to return ever to that place until they repented of the letter that those elders had written. Now, it's been 12 years and they haven't. I did get an invitation to speak there a year and a half ago, which was interesting from the leadership. And I said, well, you know, we got some issues to work on, but I'd be happy to consider it. They want to know what I'd learned in the time since I'd been there. So that was an interesting invitation, and we're still working on some of the relationship things that may allow that to happen someday. But it's not my angst anymore. To me, those guys did me an incredible favor. It wasn't that I already didn't see through it, but what I didn't see through, I did want a different way of doing church. I did want to be more relational. But the way we were building it was still on the religious priorities of commitment and human effort. It really took stepping away from all that to see that even though we had the right priorities, we were building it on the same methodologies that is ultimately going to produce the same system anyway. It's just, because the system isn't about what you meet in a building and all that, as we've said a million times on here. It's about whether we're responding to what God's doing or we're trying to do things for Him. And I look back and say, gosh, a lot of people we manipulated, a lot of people, you know, things that I did and said back then. The hungers were all good, but the way we were doing it, I'd love to go back and be able to say.
Did you know it at the time? I mean, you say we manipulated people. Did you think that's what you were doing?
Absolutely not. No, we were serving them. Oh, yeah, we had the whole servant leadership language down. I mean, you can
that
serve.
That is so wild, isn't it? Here you can step back and see, my gosh, that was manipulating them. But at the time, you're going like, wait a minute, we're serving them.
Oh, and you see that all the time, even with some of the quote-unquote out-of-the-box people. I serve you by getting you to see things my way and living the way I think you should live. And it really is so twisted. And that's the one thing we got to lay down. It's not my job to convince. It's my job to be clear. It's my job to live free. It's not my job to convince. It's the Holy Spirit's job. John 16 is pretty clear there. And when people are convinced, I get to help them along the journey where I can, and I get to be helped along the journey where others can do that for me. But certainly, I think most of what passes for love in that system is just manipulation with a love suit on.
Wow.
So, yeah.
But I got another one for you.
Okay.
You got a somewhat of a Pentecostal background, yeah?
No, not really.
Or at least charismatic, whatever.
Charismatic,
Baptist, at least Holy Spirit stuff.
It was Baptist most of my young life and then charismatic through high school years.
The question is, what from that kind of background still impacts and enriches your journey today, and i.e. tongues, miracles, healing, barking like a dog?
I feel it coming on, brother, right here. We could stay just a little revival. Well, the Baptist thing, I tell you, gave me a love for Scripture that I still have. I mean, and gave me a base knowledge to work from Scripture in, even though I don't agree with a lot of the conclusions they came to. But I treasure that still. As far as miracles and healings, and we had this discussion before, I think what Jesus lived in the Gospels and what the early church exhibited is meant to be nominal in our lives. It's meant to be
normal.
The way we live. Yeah. Is nominal like kind of like angst, probably?
Nominal kind of, I don't think quite. Normal sounds a little better than what I think you were trying to say.
I guess watching space shuttle coverage today, you know, things are nominal. But I think there's a growing reality of the fact as long as we're trying to shape God to our agenda, we're going to see very little of that. And as we learn to live in the Father's agenda, we see more. And I think I said this before in a previous podcast. I pray for the sick lots. I see miracles happen somewhat. Not every day. I don't see thousands of people healed. I mean, I'd love to walk down the street and have my shadow fall on people and folks get healed. There's still more I want to see happen there.
Uh-huh.
But I'm very passionate about it. I mean, prayer language is something I use daily. I'm convinced that those gifts are tools in our hands. But I also think they've been used to be divisive in the family. And so I don't want to be divisive
like badges
with
those trophies
gifts.
and trying to get your value out of them.
And if you don't pray in tongues, your experience is suspect.
Us.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I think that what was unfortunate about the charismatic renewal is it so quickly turned into a power grab that it separated the family. And it was haves and have-nots, and I hate that kind of thing. Even though I don't mind people being offended if they understand certain – I mean, I don't hide things because I'm afraid of people being offended, but I don't want to use things to be divisive, and that's kind of what controls my passion there.
Good answer, good answer.
Sue wants to know what's the naughtiest swear word you've ever uttered out of the range of a microphone. and we're going to bleep this.
I don't really think I'm supposed to repeat that here, but, you know, I think what I've recognized is...
Like that naughtiest word.
Naughtiest.
That's Australian there.
when you got unresolved anger on the inside, it seems to manifest itself on the poor side of language. That's something I've realized.
Gee, I bet that's news to everybody out there.
Yeah, I know.
None of us have ever said things.
And so I think in heated moments when I wasn't really clearly thinking, I've been able to, you know, I can bring the paint off the wall or something like that. But thankfully, it's not something that I do regularly. Words like pissed off and sucked are part of the younger generation language, and I don't really count them as swear words.
In fact, the first time you used that...
That's still one of our most popular podcasts.
That was
fantastic. Because you just lost it.
You're going to go in the Hall of Fame.
Podcasts are shutting off all over the world with your reaction.
I was hurting so bad. I was laughing so hard. It was sad.
Next.
Well, we have to run it here. We're getting we're pulling in a lot of time here. I was wondering about Brad for a future podcast. Who are the people in his life that have shaped your vision, whether they be people he knows or authors or whatever? If he had a dinner party with the five people who helped him see the freedom of Christ, who would it be?
Ooh, wow.
That's a thinking question.
Yeah, that's not one I can just ramble off so easily. But there's one man, James Ryle, who is a dear friend and has had a big impact on me. God just used him in some wonderful ways to kind of help me understand a little more about how to hear the voice of God.
Okay.
I'd toss Wayne Jacobson up there. You really helped me get completely thrown out of church, and it was wonderful.
This may count as another plug.
No, not a plug. But God brought you, I think, alongside my life in a wonderful, needed time, and it really has shaped. I mean, I think what we're doing today is largely because God had a real purpose in bringing us together.
And I feel similarly.
There's a man by the name of Kemper Crabb, who is a missionary guy over in India and Uganda.
How do you get through life with a name like Kemper Crabb?
He's an ex-football coach at a university level who is now kind of acting like a modern-day Indiana Jones for Jesus.
Wow.
And
there's a movie there.
There is. This guy, I mean, I could tell stories for hours. He's someone that has just radically opened my eyes to the simplicity of obeying Jesus and watching supernatural stuff happen. And we're running out of time, but those are three that are fantastic.
Okay.
I have a long list of others that I'm appreciative of, but those would be three guys.
That's cool.
I got a question for you. This will be funny. I think the premise is a little challenging, but if you've just been selected to join a Christian version of Survivor,
and you've been
given the honor of selecting other members of your team, who would you select and why?
Well, we actually watch Survivor around here. It's kind of a family water cooler kind of a conversation.
Is there a Christian version of Survivor?
No.
Cutthroat, Outlast, Outlaw?
Yeah, see, I don't really want to handle that question.
Avoid it as you will.
There are things that God deals with in my life, and one of them is my intense competitive.
Yeah, you're a little bit competitive.
Kind of win at all costs kind of dude. I remember being in a group in high school where
I could do a demo tape for you and get you on Survivor. I'm sure I could.
We had to do $5. Everybody had to put in $5. There was a group of about 10 of us, and we did this in front of the class. And the thing was, we had to agree on one person to give all of the money to without splitting it among anybody, or it went to the teacher, which I don't know if it was legal. But anyway, I won that because I was able to manipulate the whole crowd. So,
you were pretty good about your chances.
So yeah, you know, if I was choosing people to be on Survivor with me, I'd choose, you know, weak, no good people, easily manipulatable.
No, they seem to last to the end.
But the question seems to say, you know, you early on you want people that are, you know, gifted and qualified and able to help you get through the athletic parts of it, and then you got to dump them. And
I'd probably pick Judas.
Judas,
someone like Judas.
Well, because, he'd win. I wouldn't pick him.
He'd reveal himself, and there'd be a lot of people wouldn't like him. You get down to the final two, me or Judas, they throw Judas out.
The problem is, most of the winners on Survivor are Judas types, much more often than anything else.
That's kind of true.
Yeah.
So you take the Holy Spirit?
But 30.
Would you take Jesus or the Holy Spirit?
In the Survivor game? Well, how can you do that? What are you talking about? I mean, they'd go with me, sure. But they'd be on my side. I mean, I'd try to be on their side, but yeah, I want them on my team. But okay, that's a wonderful question. You're throwing that one out.
All right. What's the role of world missions or missionaries in the life of the church today?
You know what? We're going to do a whole podcast on that. So.
Oh, that's just skipping it. What's your most embarrassing moment?
And if you haven't read the Jamal story on my blog, go read it. That says a lot about what I think about how God wants to touch the world today.
What's your most embarrassing moment? Come on. What's your most embarrassing moment?
Oh, gosh. There's probably 25 of them.
Reveal thyself. Just pick one.
Most embarrassing moment.
I got one. I got one.
You've embarrassed me?
No.
Oh,
no.
For you.
Yes,
see,
I,
you
yes.
know my
the
most
truth
embarrassing
is I have embarrassed you.
Right now is pretty close to it. But
you got one?
Well, I think of some really bad sermons I taught. Like, but one on humility that was just so untrue. Is
be
to
like me.
So, I mean, there are those ministry things like that.
At you look back and feel embarrassed.
At a personal level, you know, when you... When you throw a rock at a bird and it hits your daughter's car, that's not good.
Yeah,
that was recent. So, and then having to own up to that, and new car too. So there you go. I put the first ding in it, so I'm popular in this family. But
all right.
Then there's other more intentional embarrassing moments, but we can leave those out.
You got a favorite childhood memory?
Oh man, I have tons. I had a great childhood.
Other yeah.
All in the work we did on the farm, but yeah, camping out with the family. Baseball game. I have three brothers, four of us, and then my parents. We'd go out 3-on-3 baseball games in the back, the yard where we stacked the raisins when raisins were being done. So, yeah, I had a great childhood. I look back and had a lot of fun with my family, had an awful lot of fun with my friends going through school, and so yeah, it was good.
What do you do for fun?
Fun. I love to hang with Sarah since we travel a lot and I travel a lot. We don't get to do that much. So I love hanging with her. I love getting up early in the morning and being the first one to tee off on the golf course.
Ooh.
And if I get to play all
it's a
by myself.
It's damp out there, isn't
it? It is, but I don't mind. I love playing alone if I get the chance. Just me and Jesus and 18 holes and two and a half hours. And so I'm competitive. I've got them every time. I give myself a lot of putts when I'm playing with him.
It's a gimme.
I stand on the tee. It's a gimme.
It's a gimme. Take a mulligan.
Used to love playing volleyball. Still do when I get a chance. We used to play when I was part of this congregation. We 2 days a week, 10 or 12 of us went down and played volleyball.
The manly ones.
No, we had gals play. We had gals play with us. I just had a ball. I mean, I love volleyball. I love golf. I love love watching football with my family. That's a lot of fun. My whole family comes over during football season, and we watch some games together and have a great laugh. Love playing with Amy. My goodness, Amy's probably, that's my 22-month-old granddaughter. That's a biggie.
Ooh. What was the single most impacting person or experience that drew you into a relationship with the Lord? Did you have one?
Yeah, it was God showing up in a grape vineyard.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I don't know, I've just always had this drawing to God, and I just went out my dad's vineyard one day, and I just said, God, if you're real in the universe, I want to know you.
Yeah.
And I was just walking down this row, and I just praying and asking God. Looking back, it was kind of a little kiddie thing, but, man, all of a sudden, something happened, and I was probably a quarter mile maybe from the house out in this vineyard alone, and it wasn't night, it was right in the middle of the day, and all of a sudden, I knew I wasn't alone in the universe, and I was terrified. It scared me to death, and I ran home because I didn't know what to do with it. But I knew he wasn't trying to be scary. I just knew, I mean, because I remember as a kid, we were taught God's a bit on the scary side. That terror, it was kind of that wondrous fear thing. It just, that presence that I felt that day has been the thing that keeps drawing me. I want to know the God of the Bible, the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. That was the beginning thing. And I think that's why everything I've ever done church-wise, everything I've ever done religion-wise, everything is measured by that. Does it draw me closer to that reality? Or do I find it pulling me away from that reality? And that's pretty much how I've assessed everything on this journey.
Wow. Hey, if you only had 24 hours to live, what would you do?
Oh, we talked about that on a walk this afternoon, Sarah and I.
You got a primer for it.
It wasn't 24 hours.
What was the answer? 6 months, whatever.
Yeah, she asked if I'd still work or something because we've got some people we know dealing with some very life-threatening things at young ages. And, I love what I do now. So if I only had a day to live, there's certainly things that Sarah and I would enjoy together. And there's some things I'd probably want to get finished righted before I couldn't write no more. Righted. How's that for a language?
Righted. That's good.
Yeah, written. Probably a little that. It's people I'd call and love to talk to and say goodbye, see you in a few years whenever you get your pass out of here. I look at that as a great thing, really. I look at the time when I shed this corruptible flesh to see God face to face. I mean, there's things I still enjoy about being here, but That'll be a good day.
I'll be honest. There's some days I'm kind of like, hey, when we jump in ship, Jesus.
Even so, Lord Jesus, come quickly.
Yeah. Like, that'd be cool.
Yeah, well, we're running. We're over time here. So if you're bored, go ahead and shut it off. But let's finish the question. People like them. That's great. You mentioned a few times in podcasts about one particular sermon or service where you kind of spoke out something that was the reason you got booted from your church. Well, I was just wondering if that something was related to what you were starting to see about the church not being an organization built by people and the Sunday club mentality, or was it something else?
Yeah, you know, the reality is I saw a lot of stuff that was making me question kind of everything. Not the sincereness with which we were trying to, quote, minister and do church, but I was just going like, you know what? I don't see it bearing the fruit we're trying to produce. I don't think this is working. And so I recognize that a lot of times, you know, I think the central thing for me that I knew that was writing on the wall is I recognized that I was so loved and so well liked that in many respects I had become a substitute Jesus for people.
Hmm.
And that scared me more than anything else because I didn't want to be that. And I didn't know how to get rid of that.
Hmm.
Because I hadn't tried, I just was sincerely trying to help people, and yet I realized I was standing in their way of finding the kind of relationship I was exhorting them unto, and just going like, this isn't going to work.
Yep.
And the real reason I got kicked out is because I confronted some financial wrongdoing, and in the process of trying to go about doing that and finding a way to bring forth a solution, that just was untenable to the powers that be, and they wanted to eat us. So they did.
Wow.
So they just booted me. They put some sort of restraining order. They sent out about 10,000 letters all over the place denouncing me. And they fried me in a wonderful way. That was hard, but I could sit back and go, wow, thank you guys. I didn't appreciate why and what you did, but I love where it's landed me.
It's like that Joseph thing. I mean, I think that's one of the theme scriptures. Most people, you know, what some folks intended for evil, God uses for incredible good.
Yeah, I don't think I could or would have drawn some of the conclusions that I have that enabled me to see some of what I think God is doing, especially in me and our family, if I hadn't gone through what we did.
Yeah, and I think what really exposes the system for what it is moments like that. I mean, you think, my gosh, it seems to be this way, it seems to be that way. And then when people absolutely just lie and discredit somebody who was a friend, you know, 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
And now is the devil's henchman in our midst. And I was with a couple this week that, in fact, gave me the letter from their pastor, which we'll get to talk about up the road. But, I mean, that's exactly what they went through. And then when you see that, then it's like everything you suspected about this thing turns out to be true. And that people will, you can go from best friend to disgusting maggot just because you struggle with some things. And that's a deal. So... I got one for you. What is justice?
What is justice?
It says, why is this so important to Jesus? What keeps us from living justly with those around us? That sounds like a whole podcast, doesn't it?
That is a whole podcast. I'll attempt a tiny little stab at it. I think justice is defined by God setting things right. I think we have a recognition when it doesn't seem like things are right. And I think justice has that sense of earmark that this is how God would evaluate it.
That's all I got, man. Are you clear?
Largely. I have one. I'm curious how you would even answer it.
Okay.
What would you consider your greatest achievement? I knew you'd have that kind of face.
You did?
Yeah.
Too bad we don't have video here, huh?
Yeah. This needs to be on the video iPod. Do you consider yourself as having a greatest achievement?
No, I wouldn't. Well, you know what? My first thought was, but I wouldn't consider it mine. But I think the most significant, one of the most significant things in my life is the 31-year relationship I've had with Sarah and what we've been through and what that's drawn us closer to each other. So I mean, I think. But again, I think that's God's doing.
Well,
so.
I mean, I know you don't really think in terms of achievement, I thought that was interesting.
But. And then after that, Tim, I got two adult kids that I absolutely love. And I think they're just great, great kids. They're wonderful friends to hang out with. They're not perfect. My goodness, there's all kinds of things I'd fix about them if I could. But I have two wonderful adult children. And to me, those are the most significant things by far.
The relationships.
Yeah, those things.
I figured you'd answer that.
I don't think
way.
They're my achievements. They're just my gifts, and I do enjoy them a ton.
Good answer.
So we done?
Yeah. We're out of here.
Well, you know what? You can still keep throwing questions at us. We probably won't do a whole nother show on us because we'd rather, much rather talk about the king. But we thought it'd be helpful to get to know a little bit more about us and what kind of makes us tick. But if you got stuff, send it in. We'll work it in somewhere in the podcast now and then. And I'm off to New York. I'm going to hang out with some folks out there this weekend, so that should be fun.
I think I'm going surfing.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.